Hey everyone, welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And first, haven't said it in a little while, but thank you very much for everyone who's listening, subscribing, downloading, telling a friend. If you want to learn a little bit about wine, maybe have a laugh or two and just sort of learn about the adventures of a lot of different winemakers, sommeliers, people in restaurants and consignment, this isn't a bad place to be. So today, my interview is with Zevenier Vignon. And I'm not going to lie to you, I may have gone to a higher bar in terms of my mispronunciation of his name. And I'm always, let me give you a little tip. I'm always at the worst the first time I say it, because now these interviews, you don't get to meet in person and hang out for a little bit. So you get on Zoom or Skype or whatever, and it takes a couple minutes, and there you are. Hey, I see you. You see me. Wait, get your volume, mute. And by the way, usually it's me going, oh God, I'm screwing up here. And then you start the interview. And I'm just too sheepish to ask before, hey, how do I pronounce your name? So I do my best. And often, and this might shock you, I actually go on YouTube and try to find videos where the winemakers are being interviewed somewhere else. It doesn't seem to help. Like, Zevenier's last name is Vignon. I think I say Vionier. Now listen, I love Viognier. Give me Condru every day. I'm perfectly good with that. But wow, am I wrong. I mean, just horribly, horribly wrong. Anyway, I'll get to the interview with him for a second. I want to give a quick shout out. I actually have a glass of one of his wines, his Côte de Rhône 2016, the Village level. And so the Village level is, think of it as the second level of Côte de Rhône. The first level Côte de Rhône, more generic, grape sourced from all over that region in Southern Rhone. Doesn't mean it's not good. They're often excellent. But this is just a higher level because these grapes are sourced from very specific villages within the Rhone region. So there are certain higher standards that must be made in the vineyard, in the winery, before the wine can be released. And by the way, little hot take here, because I've been drinking a lot more Côte de Rhône recently. You'll hear another, I'll be doing a couple other winemaker interviews. But I gotta tell you, this area is starting to rank with Chianti Classico as one of my favorite areas for value wines. And for me, and everyone has their own price point. For me, my price point for the good value wines is $11, $12 to $15, where these wines punch well above their weight. And this wine here is just under $21, and it absolutely deserves it. And you can find this wine in two places, Noble Estates, and you can go to nobleestates.com. They threw me this bottle, and as I said in some tweets and Instagrams about other places, and I'll just say it again, I'm happy to get wines from consignment companies because usually it often leads to me being able to interview winemakers. And these are interesting people with great stories. And I want to get their stories, their journeys, their highs, their lows. I want to get it out there to you, the listener. But the one rule I always have is I will never fake that I like a wine. If I don't like the wine, I won't talk about it, and I probably won't interview the winemaker. If I do, I'll skirt around the specific wine if a company has sent me a bottle or any sort of samples. So I just to let you know, as I always say on this pod, I'm not going to rip the bad wines, because even the bad wines, except for some, you're high sugary California, South American, you know who you are. These wines are still in Australia. Can't forget Australia. But even a lot of wines that I deem are bad, well, who am I? I might think it's bad, but you might love it. And there's a certain level of arrogance that goes with it of me going, oh, this is a bad wine. You should avoid it. I mean, I can tell you why I don't like a certain wine if it doesn't follow my palate or if it's not varietally correct. Every grape should taste the way it should taste. But I don't want to discourage anyone. And also, even wines that I don't like, a lot of them can be correct. And there's a lot of hands that went into making it. So I just don't like to bleep all over bad wine. I'd rather just share wines that I enjoy, and I hope they bring you joy. And the wine that I'm drinking here, the Zevenier Vignon 2016 Village Level Côte de Rhône, it's fantastic. And it's like 20, it's definitely, I don't think more than $21. But, you know, the bang for the buck is pretty damn good. The nose is, you know, the first thing I'm hit with is just a little bit of perfume, but a lot of floral, a lot of purple flower floral. And then the pepper hits you, the sweet red fruit, the plum, a little bit of savory notes. And now you're entering the world of Cote de Rhone, you know, the sweet red fruit. Oh, okay, now I'm going Cote de Rhone, and the pepper. Oh, okay, that must be, you know, that's some of the Syrah, and it's all there. And then I'm not going to do the sip thing. I've taken plenty, but I don't want to do that slurping thing. I think it might get annoying. I don't know how you feel about it. Sometimes I feel bad. But I took a sip right before I recorded. Peppery, spicy notes. That's consistent. On the palate, more dark fruit than red fruit. I got more red fruit on the nose than on the palate. More plum. Definitely a lot more plum, but more dark fruit. Juicy, meaty as well. I call these inviting tannins. You know, you get a lot of like Barolos or Cabs or, you know, or Bordeaux. And these are like big tannins. They grab you and they slap you around a little bit. This doesn't do that. And I'm not saying one way is better than the other. I like a good intense tannin. But this is much more just an inviting, fun tannin wine. Again, it's not going to work you over. It's a warm wine. Like you can feel the booze. It's 14.5. But I mean by feel the booze like afterwards. You have a couple sips and you sort of get that relaxed state. You don't get that hot thing on the back of your on the back of your throat. So it is very much in balance. So, you know, if you're looking to find value wines and you don't mind throwing down a 20 and you're not getting much change back, Cote de Rhone, like, you know, Gugel does good stuff. You know, this one here, Xavier Vignon, I highly recommend. It's at LCBOs all over the place. And check out Noble Estates. They do have a really good portfolio, nobleestates.com. So that's it for me for trying to sell or talk up this wine and just sort of give another little refresher on the philosophy that I have with this wine podcast. And listen, I'm fine with wine criticism. There's tons of places to go get it. You can seek it out, and it is needed because there is bad wine out there. There's wine that's made that you can tell there's shortcuts and the sugar and there's chemicals. And it says it's, you know, a Merlot from Chile, but just tastes like a red grape juicy drink with some sugar in it. And, you know, that's horrible. You don't want that. So here it is, my interview from Southern Rhone, from the Cote de Rhone area. Here is Xavier Vignon.
The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And for this one, we're going down to the Cote de Rhone, Châteauneuf-du-Pape, southern France. From Xavier. I'm talking now with Xavier Vignon. Thank you so much for joining the podcast.
Yeah, very happy to feel that with this new technology to feel well with you in Canada.
Yeah, It is so strange. A couple of years ago, there's no way I could be interviewing someone right from France and put it up on the podcast.
Yeah, it's so great. You know, it's a new experience for me. I'm turning 50 last year, and I just started to use this technology. So, but I feel a bit stupid to take the plane always, and even if with the wine, with the consulting, will be not possible to do everything from home, but. As many people say, there will be something before and the after.
Yeah, we'll get into that in a second, just about how this is going to affect your business and consulting. But I was wondering, Xavier, if you could just tell the listeners a little bit about the winery and a little bit, just a mini background on it.
Yeah, the background, you know, I'm coming from the north part of France. And I'm coming from a specific family on stone sculpting. But the tradition from the Middle Age, to be honest, it's many generation. The tradition was before to make a stop in your life, before to be able to restore a church, everything, you have to do the Tour de France. So it means that all the generations before me, they have done the Tour de France. And when I was a bit younger, I decided not to become the same stone sculptor on the traditional way, but I really fell in love with the wine. I met some winemakers, and then I was really okay with the science part, scientific part. And I decided to become a winemaker when I was about 16. And then I was feeling free because my family coming close to Champagne, but nobody was in the wine business. So I started to do my Tour de France and doing my school studies, enology. I was going to Bordeaux. So I spent 10 years about at 10 different places in France. And in early 90s, I discovered the South Hemisphere. It was a dream for a French winemaker to go there and then to share with all the people. So my first big flight in the South Hemisphere for learning and winemaking was in the early 90s in the Australian Pyrenees in Australia. Mm-hmm. And that was great for me. And then it's like a virus, not this one bad we have now, but the virus to go to exchange. So half a year, I was in North Hemisphere, especially in France, once in California. And half a year, I was in South Hemisphere, New Zealand, South Africa, Australia, Tasmania. And it was really a life like a ping pong. And I really enjoyed that. And it was like I told you before, a real virus. And it was difficult to make a stop. So during about 12, 13 years, always on the move. And to keep my promise I did to my grandpa was, okay, I promise to you to do also my Tour de France. The last region I was missing was the Southern Rhone. I've been working Champagne, Alsace, Bordeaux, Ribes, right side, left side, Burgundy, Loire Valley, Languedoc-Roussillon. Anyway, the only region I did not have a stop before was in the Southern Rhone Valley. It was in 96. So before to sign a contract for me, they asked me to stay at the same place for 3 years, was in Australia. And then I just say, okay, we are in June, so I just need to spend one more harvest in the Southern Rhone, and then I will come back. It was in 96. I was arrived in this area, in the especially close to the Dentelle de Montmirail, you know, a lovely place to be. And I fall in love. And I'm still there after 20, 25 years soon.
What happened? You said you were 16 when you decided you wanted to go into wine. What was it? Was there a specific moment that made you fall in love with this?
At school, I was close to geology. Mm-hmm. As I told you, I was really a scientific guy. So, yeah. And during the summer, we had an experience in Champagne. Not for making wine, but for searching paleontology and making some geology research. And then I met a winemaker, and then we started to exchange with people, producers in Champagne, then making the harvest and drinking wine, testing wine. And then I thought that one day I met a winemaker. He was coming he was back from California. And he was speaking about his life of consultant. And I said, okay, I want to do that. And then it was like a dream because it's difficult when you are a teenager to know what you want to do. And I did because of a mix of geology, friends, party by night. And it was a camping for three weeks. So it was really relaxed. And then that was the beginning.
I can totally see how you're young and you're into geology and science, and then you're in Champagne, how that would sway you and make you fall in love with wine. That makes total sense. What was your family's reaction? Because as you mentioned, your family doesn't come from a background in wine. So when you're telling your hardworking mom and dad that you want to go into wine, how do they feel about it?
Yeah, but you know, they come from the long history of, we call it Compagnon du Devoir. It's a specific history coming from the Milodège. For my grandpa, was not so easy. He just asked me to keep this promise of to be on the move before to make a stop.
Right.
And I was very lucky because they were really well educated with the wine business. So not to make wine, but they were drinking at each dinner, lunchtime. They used to drink wine, and I was well educated for testing when I was maybe. We start, you know, the family, when you are 5, 6 years old, we started to test grappa, we started to test wines and how to make the difference. It was like a game. But after work, they used to work a lot, but it was really concentrating on gastronomy, and wine was a big part of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
they were quite happy because okay, but just promise to do your Tour de France. Right. Don't stay. Be on the move 10 years before to make a stop, and I did. I'm still on the move, but I did for more than 12 years.
Okay, so I'd love to hear a little bit more about Xavier, about the winery in terms of what was your first harvest? What was your first vintage like?
Like I started in the Rhône Valley, like the consultant. Yep. I did not have any vineyard, which is the case now. I've got some vineyard, but I started to do only consulting. Mm-hmm. Based in the Rhône Valley and still keeping consulting in Austria, North Hemisphere, a bit in Europe. But I was really based since 96. And when my son is born in 2001. And in 2001, I started to say, oh, it's a great vintage, especially in Châteauneuf-du-Pape. And I had my own company of consulting. So I was looking at in 2001 on about 150 different wineries. And it was a great challenge to say, okay, I'm going to do like in Champagne. Champagne was coming back to me. Oh, you are free. You don't have any vineyard, but you can make a blend on your own and you are totally free to take or not to take. It's still the philosophy to have the freedom to do or not to do. Some vineyards, some vintage I don't like and not making any wine. But the first was 2001, really, officially, for this. I can show you because the bottle... It's funny. It's 2001.
Yeah.
Châteauneuf-du-Pape, which is called Ange, which is my son.
Ah.
And we did. It's a 2001 Châteauneuf-du-Pape, and we did the bottling the day of his birthday, 18th birthday last year. So.
Oh, that's great.
You should see that on the market in a few months or a few weeks, and it's quite strange to. And this is my first blend. Bottle 18 years after.
Oh, what? Wait a minute. The 2001, is that available anywhere?
Yeah, we just did the bottling last year. So we start to put that on the market. You know, we did with my son. He was turning 18 in July, yeah. Yeah. 17th of July. So the 17th of July, that was a promise to him and also close to the tradition, say, making a bottling on your 18 years, which is... access to the majority in France. Yeah. And we did the bottling by hand. And these bottles needs to be aged, I will say, in bottle for six, seven months. Sorry. And then they were supposed to be on the market early this year, but because of the COVID, everything. And but they're on the market. We just start to sell it, this vintage.
Well, speaking of selling, let's talk about at least two of the wines. And Noble Estates represents a lot of what Xavier does. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about your Xavier Côte du Rhône.
The Côte du Rhône is really my base wine. And before to speak about the wine, if you're okay with that, Matthew, I would like to, because it's not a joke, the first packs I received making an order of my wine was on the 2001 vintage, and it was made by Noble Estates. And so Canada was the first to access to my wine on exportation.
Oh, and that's fantastic. I didn't know that. That's fantastic.
No, not a lot of people know that, but it was really the first fact. When I decided to go not only doing consulting, but also to sell the wines, I was making a show in Cannes, so in France, and I met the owner of Noble Estates. And then they introduced the wine, and the first order was by fax, and it was a Bombe de Venise 2001. I remember, but it's so funny. So Canada was a big part in my history, you know, and I'm very happy that Canada is still going with my wine. So thanks a lot. And to be honest, the Côte du Rhône is really for me, I don't like to say the big blend, but it's really respected my philosophy, like in Champagne, to do or not to do. To give you an example, in this Côte du Rhône, you have, I suppose you have the 2016 or vintage?
I have the 2018. Actually, this is the new one. This is the 2018, yeah.
2018, very fruity year. And then to give you an idea, I because it's a regular appellation, but it doesn't mean that it's I take a regular Côte du Rhône. Most of them, they are village, but I feel very free. In this Côte du Rhône, you have more than 400 different producers. inside in 2018, you have also about 5% of the blend is coming from my vineyard. This is also the concept. When I make a blend, I don't want to copy anybody. Mm-hmm. So at least one producer can't represent more than 5%. It's a law. It's just to make him free. And then I don't have any contract. So if I like, I can buy. If I don't like, I'm not taking. So the 2018 was really, fruit years. And we have, it's not a joke, the Rhône has the global warming. But why I still loving the Rhône, even after 25 years, soon 25 years, it's because we are very free. We have a good extension possible on the altitude. The Rhône Valley, you know, we can play with close to 20 different varieties, including the whites. We have 50 different terroirs. It's a long, long harvest. We start to do the harvest with Syrah sometimes end of August, and we finish with some Mourvèdre close to November. So it means that every year you have a big complexity able to come in the same bottle. And when I say that the 2018 was more than 400 different producers, it means that you have more than 1,000 different parcels inside. It's really inspired. My Côte du Rhône is really inspired, of course, by the Rhône, mostly Grenache, as we have to do with the Southern Rhône. And this liberty, this freedom to go when you want, where you want to go is absolutely superb. And to define the style, and maybe not only the Côte du Rhône, but the Xavier style, I like to have tannins, but I don't like to feel them too much. So the concept is always for that. You have to have something ripe, not overripe, just ripe with to keep some acidity, which is more and more difficult. It's why I'm going up and up to the vineyard. In this Côte du Rhône, also the regular average is my recipe. I don't like to say recipe, but you know, we have a density of about 4,000 vines per hectare.
Yeah.
My recipe, try to make one vine will make one bottle. So it means 1 kilogram per vine. I think it's the good balance. It's not too high. It's just to respect the terroir and to be sure to be ripe, and also to have enough. When I say saltiness, enough saltiness for me means a kind of minerality. I'm very sensitive to that. We don't have a lot of acidity. The only way, I will say that the wine, many people ask me, what's a good wine for me? For me, a good wine is a wine making me thirsty.
Yeah.
If the wine is making you thirsty, that's a good wine.
That is.
And for the Grenache, for the Côte du Rhône, to make you thirsty, it has to be salty. To have this saltiness, you need Mistral. Because of the wind, you know, the berries, they lose water, and the pump is on. And then to do that, you have to have all vine. It's why the Côte du Rhône is made with, in average, 80 years old Grenache. Hmm. I don't like a 20, 25 years. I'm okay to make rosé with that. But I don't like the Grenache when it's young because the roots, they are not so deep. And then they don't have the pump deep to be able to bring this water with minerals and then to keep the minerals into the berries and to lose the water. So you make a big concentration of mineral salts. When I speak about minerality, for me, just looking, I don't give any definition because there is no definition in the dictionary, but I means that minerality is just looking at the total mineral salts included into the wine.
And that, there's always the debate of what minerality means, and it's going to mean something different no matter where you are because different water sources and different soils. You mentioned acidity and also climate change. How difficult is it to have proper acidity in wines in Southern Rhone, where it can get very hot?
Yeah, to be honest, the global warming, as I told you, is really not a joke. To give you a good example, when I arrived into the Rhone 25 years ago, we used to pick the grapes. We used to pick the grapes 3 weeks to 1 month before than now. And in the same time, we have about 1.5 alcohol more now.
Really?
So if you that as, it means that we pick 1 month before and we have in average 1.5. So what's happened? It means that it's not a joke. The best terroir are on the move. You know, when I started to work, not only in the Rhône, but especially in the Southern Rhône, when I started to work, the problem was the reduction problem. So the aging was really the good recipe to make the wine much more better. Today is the opposite. The enemy is oxidation because we are much more riper. The pH are really high. We start to have the same pH that we used to have when they started in the South Hemisphere. You know, in average, we used to have 3.4. Now we have 3.8. It means that it's another world.
Yeah.
It's another world. And how to keep this freshness? You have to accept to be on the move. For me, the best terroir, today I'm in Châteauneuf-du-Pape, but I will tell you that 25 years ago, the best terroir were not the same than now. It used to be more the south part because sandy soil. So the water was going much more than now. And of course, now sometimes it's too dry. And then we start to speak about irrigation. It's something also I want to say for me, from my side, I used to make mistakes like a lot of winemakers were making mistakes. You try to learn about that. And I don't accept any more irrigation. I don't accept, you know, it's why I'm very sensitive to the edge, to also the pruning. I'm much more to the gobelet side, you know.
Right.
No line. So because of the wind, the vine has to stay. So if you have a line, then you don't have a lot of roots because the wine doesn't have to work against the wind. But if you are really with the Mistral here, well exposed, then all the year the vine has to make roots to stay alive.
Yeah.
Then you have much more roots than another line. So I really focus on the vineyard for that. And it's why I like Gobelet. I like all Grenache. Of course, the Grenache, if you're doing well, can work long time. You know, some cuvées like the Vieille-Vigne, sometimes they're just planted after the Phylloxera. So some of them, they are 120 years old. So the global warming makes a huge difference. But I will say that the best terroir are going to the altitude. We are lucky in the Southern Rhône. In this Côte du Rhône, you have some parcel of Syrah and Grenache over than 650 meters altitude. So it means that when you start to pick the same variety, I will say beginning of September, these varieties, they will come 3 weeks to 1 month later. So we go back to the all, I will say, the whole world without the same, with the same ripeness and the same acidity.
That is not some of those numbers you mentioned about global warming. And so let's talk about one of the other wines I have. And again, you can get all of these at Noble Estates. Some of them are at the LCBO, but you can also order a case. And no one's going to stores now anyway, so get a case of wine, save yourself a trip, save yourself the lineups. So the other Xavier that I have here is your Côte du Rhône, but is the Village Côte du Rhône. I was wondering if you could tell the listeners the difference between your more entry-level Côte du Rhône and the Village one.
Yeah.
And by the way, this year is 2000. The Village, this is the 2016.
Yeah, the 2016. So maybe a few words about 2016 because it's a specific year. Really, it was, if you ask me, after 25 years in the Rhône, what's your favorite vintage? It will be 2016 for many reasons. I will say that everything was ripe. And there was nothing for a winemaker consultant. It was so easy. There was nothing to do. Nothing to do on the vineyard. Nothing to do in the winery. That was the only good recipe was don't do anything. The wine was perfect himself. So we did not have to make mechanics. You know, the wine was giving the skin. They were giving everything without any mechanics. So it was really rich year for that. And also because everything was ripe about at the same time. It means that it was the big difference between this type of year and a normal year. It's because you can mix the varieties. You know, this village is made with Grenache. Of course, it's your GSM plus some different varieties. But also, you know that when you are able to mix before fermentation all together, you have more complexity at the end. which is really the richness of 2016. That was lovely for that. And of course, when I say village for me, when I told you the average production, the maximum production for me, even at the entry level, like Côte d'Huron, it's one vine has to make one bottle.
Right.
And one Grenache has to be older than 60, 70, 80 years old to be stable. I will say with enough minerality or saltiness to be able for aging. So the village, it's another level. I mean that for the village, it's about one and a half vine in average to make one bottle. So it's about 750 grams about between that maximum 1 kilo per vine. And also village means for me a bit more in altitude. You know, the Côte d'Huron, the Rhône Valley has got many exchange. And I really like in the village to be able, and the Rhône Valley is rich for that. You can have vineyards exposed to the sunrise, vineyard exposed to the sunset. But this one village is much more older for the other varieties like Syrah and Mourvèdre. The Mourvèdre is 80 years old, for example. And the Syrah, it's a specific selection of the maybe the oldest Syrah still alive in this area, in the southern one. Very close to be honest, to most of them, they are not village, they are cru. But I like to use some cru sometimes to be declassified. I don't like to say that, but declassified in village. Sometimes I'm making specific vin de France because it's a mix of different appellations. But I like this freedom to do or not to do.
That's interesting about freedom. Freedom can be a hard thing in France, where you have all the rules and appellations and the blend has to be this and this and this. Freedom is a tougher thing in France than, say, when you were working in Australia.
You know, it's why my first blend after this one going to Ontario, to the LCBO stores, was a vin de France. When you are a consultant, when you're coming, because I was learning, I would say, much more in the new world than in the old world. And then when I arrived into the Rhône, I was very happy to have this freedom. It's really a tradition of family to use this freedom. Don't be locked. And in France, it's a nightmare, you know. It's really a nightmare. And sometimes I feel stupid. And I love France, of course. But I feel stupid because my feeling, we are speaking about the global warming, sometimes I think that the climate is changing faster than the laws in France.
Right,
and then we have to reconsider. And sometimes the concept is just to make a good wine. And for me, I respect the tradition. I respect the AOC, the AOP appellation, of course. I really like the idea to make sure that it's something good representation of the vineyard, of the terroir. But sometimes, also it's my experience in Champagne. You are free to take from different places. In Champagne, it's a huge appellation. You know, in Australia or in California, you are able to take something to make in order to make the wine better. If you make a mix to make more volume, it's not a good recipe. But everything was, the many laws are against that. Make sure you don't produce too much. The limit of this system is sometimes you limited the complexity. It's why, to give you another example, and the first Châteauneuf, and for many people, 20 years ago was a bit difficult to understand and to accept. It was to mix different vintages. How to give more complexity into the bottle in order to say it's a non-vintage. But I don't like the idea of non-vintage.
And
for example, for me, it's a multiple vintage. Most of the time, I like to have to use a bit, maybe it's 1-2% of another vintage to give more complexity to the wine. And in the Côte d'Huron village, for example, that the 16 you have, there is also 2% of 12 inside and 3% of 15.
Really? I've never heard of that before. It's almost like you're either in Champagne or in Sherry with your style of making wine there.
No, and Delo, you know, when I started, everybody says, this guy is a bit stupid. But after some vintage like 2003, 2002, because this is the law, the real law in France or in Europe, to have the vintage you are able to use up to 15% on another vintage and to keep this vintage. Mm-hmm. Of course, most of the people, they don't use it, but I'm not going to 15%, but I really like to say sometimes 1-2% on another vintage give more complexity. It's really something we use in champagne, you know, to give more spices or more acidity. If one vintage you miss, I told you here the difficulty is sometimes to have enough saltiness. If you have a vintage with not enough wind, then you don't have this minerality level. And it's very great. For example, I have kept 2007 because 0.1% of 7 in some vintages was making something totally different. It's like the biodynamic way. We accept that almost nothing makes a huge difference.
You're the first winemaker I've heard talk about that, about blending different vintages. I was wondering, Xavier, if you could, for the listeners who don't know, the Côte du Rhône, the main combo is obviously GSM, Grenache, Syrah, Mourvèdre. I was wondering if you could just talk quickly about each one of those three grapes and what each one of them, what flavor, what do they bring to your final product?
Why I like to play, some exception, but I really like to play with these three varieties. It's like to make the wine longer, to make the wine bigger, more complex, you need more varieties than one. You know, I'm a fan of Pinot Noir and I like Burgundy style. I have a Pinot Noir from Ontario sometimes. What I like in the Rhône is to have the chance to play with different varieties. And Mourvèdre is like the Pinot Meunier in Champagne, you know. It alone sometimes is difficult, but the Mourvèdre has a good acidity. The pH stays nice to the Mourvèdre. So Mourvèdre has got this freshness. The Mourvèdre gives you the volume at the beginning. You know, I like to say, and the French doesn't like to speak about that, but in the other hemisphere or other countries, we like to speak about beginning, middle palate, and finish, you know. And I will say that the best variety we have is the Mourvèdre to give you a good volume at the beginning.
Right.
Really, the Mourvèdre has these tannins on the front. So when you taste the skin of the Mourvèdre, it's got some tannins really on the front, but they can be sweet. The Mourvèdre used to be a nightmare, and the nickname of Mourvèdre was the devil because it was almost never ripe. With the global warming, the Mourvèdre now is ripe and give you less alcohol, more acidity, better pH. I mean, the pH is still lower, and with these tannins ripe, you have something more in the beginning. So the beginning of the mouth is much more better with Mourvèdre when you can that. For the southern one, I don't speak about the northern one, but the southern one, Syrah, has got a big power in the middle palate. You know, we could not accept to say that a 100% Syrah from the southern one is the same style than northern Rhône or some Syrah like in Australia or on California. No, in the south part of the Rhône, it's a good middle palate, very full body, but very short because it doesn't have the final, it doesn't have the enough saltiness. So the Syrah gives you a lot of body in the middle for a short time. But if you have a good beginning with Mourvèdre, then when you put Syrah, so you give a good door to Syrah. And then, of course, because of the saltiness I was speaking about, because of the freshness due to the lot of mineral salts, then the final is always Grenache in the southern Rhône. So if you play with Mourvèdre, you have a good beginning. Middle palate is done by the Syrah, but the final is always by the Grenache.
That is a great answer. I think that really helps to encapsulate exactly what we're trying to get here. And again, you can get these wines at Noble Estates. I think there's also some Chateau Neuf de Pape's there as well. Actually, real quick, just for people who don't know, and they'll see that the price of Chateau Neuf de Pape is, you know, $20, $30 more expensive than a Côte du Rhône. What is it about the Chateau Neuf de Pape where that it needs that higher price point?
The first thing is the production. You know, when I say that, for example, my Côte du Rhône is one vine, one bottle, it becomes a low for Chateau Neuf du Pape because in average, we have about 4,000 vines per hectare and the maximum is about 33 hectoliters. So it means that one bottle, one vine becomes the low in Chateau Neuf du Pape, which is really something explaining well the density, the quantity of mineral salts. Then Chateau Neuf du Pape is also, of course, there is a part of history. you know, I don't say that all the Châteauneuf are the best of the year every year. When they are nice, it's because they are right before the others. Châteauneuf du Pape is very well exposed because, and the popes, they didn't, they were not stupid. I think the Châteauneuf, that's my feeling. because Châteauneuf, it was it's the place to start. You know, the Rhône Valley, I told you, they start middle of August, they finish in November. Most of the time, Châteauneuf is one of the first to start because they are close to the river. And of course, Châteauneuf is really, really windy. I will say, if I was a vine, I would like to live in Châteauneuf du Pape. But as a winemaker I am, I prefer to live in the Dentelle de Montmirail. It's too windy, Châteauneuf du Pape. The Mistral is so hilly, which is good for the vine, but it makes the pump permanently on. It means that because of the exposure, Châteauneuf is a small mountain, you know, it's just something going up to 100 meters, close to the river, close to the freeway, and it's really, really windy. It's one of the places where the wind is the most important. And it gives what? It gives the small volume, because when the Grenache is almost ripe, it's like an air dryer, because also the soil, there is a typical soil in Châteauneuf du Pape. Most of them, they are four are different. The most important is also the wind and the color of the soil. Mm-hmm. We have, for example, Les Urgoniens, which is a specific soil with white stone, very white. It's like a mirror. So it means that this type will give you a lot of tannins, a lot of color. Why? Because the color is white. It's like a mirror, very, very hot by the day. They don't keep the color because it's white, so but very cold by the night. So this difference between day and night makes a lot of tannins. Then just close. If you look at Google Map, it's maybe 1 mile or maybe half a mile far. But same deep soil. But the color of the galets roulés, the pebbles, you know, mm-hmm. they can be almost brown, almost red. And it means that during the day, they are very hot. But by the night, of course, it's still windy. But by the night, they keep very hot. They keep high temperature. So it means that by the day, it's hot, hot by the night. So you don't produce any tannins. But you have a lot of sugar, a lot of spiciness, and a lot of minerals because of the wind. And it makes the huge difference. And to be concentrated in Châteauneuf du Pape, so you have this total production. You have also the best place to find the oldest vine, because they were planted by the Pope. Then they were planted just after Phylloxera, because Châteauneuf. So it's a place, especially on the north face of Châteauneuf du Pape, close to the freeway, that you can have very, very old, very, very old Grenache, and also collection vineyard. Châteauneuf du Pape, for me, I've got a cuvée anonyme, for example, is based on collection vineyard. And now this type of vine could be, because of the bloody French laws, it's forbidden to do the same. So in the past, no, they used to have a list. Châteauneuf, for example, is not only GSM, but it's 17 varieties yep. already accepted. So it gives more complexity. It's an appellation when you can use some white to put into the red. So it gives also more complexity. So I will say that Châteauneuf has got more less law. In a way, Châteauneuf was more and more freedom than the other appellation, because it's the older one. And because of the older collection vineyard, you have some tests that we could not find in another appellation.
Before I let you go, I probably should have started with this by asking, how are you doing? And how with coronavirus, how is that impacting your part of the world?
Yeah, I was, you know, it was my birthday present. I had the coronavirus.
That's a horrible present. That's a horrible present.
yeah. I was back from Turkey doing consulting, and I arrived 21st of March, which is my birthday, and the 23rd, I was really feeling bad. And it took me 1 month and a half. So, of course, I feel better, and I give the best to the people. We have to accept that it takes at least a couple of weeks. And of course, it affects our mentality. Not only, I'm not going to be only winemaker in the Southern Rhone, but, you know, that's the way where we can speak today easily. When I say that there will be something before and after, I think for many people, we have to consider the future differently. The coronavirus is something making more power to accept that we are very almost nothing on Earth. Of course, for the vine, with or without corona, it was exactly the same work. The only problem now will be for all of us, will be the market. I will say that the wine, you are so close to the nature. We have to be more sensitive to, after the coronavirus, my feeling with the producer, they consider much more the power and the importance of the nature and the relation between the people. And from my side, I feel that the wine is like international communication. The wine is the best way to communicate with the people. Something you share, you open a bottle not to drink yourself, it's also to share with the people, and it's something we were missing a lot, all of us, because of this coronavirus.
Yeah.
And I feel that the wine, because it's very historic, the wine, you know, I'm a winemaker consultant, but I'm so proud to see that when you speak about wine in the eyes of the people, even if you're not winemaker, even if you're not in a place producing wine, you have energy, you have power, you have passion, and I think this is the future to make the people closer. Of course, this is something very bad, but after something very bad, I think something when you touch the floor, you have to make the good way to come back. And my feeling is, also the way to make the wine will be different. And it's like an alarm. Don't forget that alone you are nothing, and you need the people. You need to do something not only for business. And I think the wine, if you're making that only for business, not only the wine, but you know, there is no good way. And if you feel that again, that the wine is not only business like the others, it's not a recipe. I think the share part of the wine will be much more better than before. And the wine, the communication of the wine and the people making the wine in another way will be also a good part of it on the future.
That's well said. And I'm glad, Xavier, that you are feeling better, and your family, everyone is safe.
Yeah. I was the only one, you know, that's also something. If you take care about you and yours, then if you accept to do the distance session. We were five at home with my kids, some friends of my kids, and I was the only one to have this, to be positive.
Yeah.
And it's why, just respect. Maybe I told you at the beginning, I think there is too much laws, but the law of protecting yourself and the others is a good one.
Yes, absolutely. Sometimes the laws of blending might not be great, but the laws with everyone stay safe and stay home, absolutely a law you should follow. I want to remind everyone before we go, if you want to find these wines, nobleestates.com. You can, if you're in Ontario, the LCBO carries them. The website is also xaviervignon.com, xaviervignon.com. But you go to Google, you'll find it. You don't need to listen to everything that I just said there. Xavier, thank you so much for doing the podcast. I wish you nothing but success and continued good health. And this has been really interesting, especially just learning just about what Grenache, Syrah, Mourvèdre, what they mean for your wines. I really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Mathieu. I know that you have this passion, and thanks a lot for sharing that with all the people. And don't forget that Ontario is a big part of my history in France.
Yeah. So. That's
you are
so
more
cool.
than welcome, because the best is to come to see not only Châteauneuf du Pape, but the place with some vineyards in the Dentelle de Montmirail. It's a very old, nice paradise, and you are more than welcome, you and yours.
Yes,
so I hope to see you soon there.
Trust me, when everything is done, all I want to do is just get a car for a month and drive around Europe to all these vineyards that I've been hearing about, and I'd love to come and visit you.
So you're my guest. I hope to see you soon.
I hope so as well. Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.